नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Just in the next room, when I went to change my clothing, I saw on the wall some picture with the writing, "Give your child a spiritual education and they will thank you for the rest of their life." And underneath was written Srila Prabhupada. Apart from the grammatical inconsistency of starting with the word child and then going on to they, I thought I'd speak about this. It's a nice sentiment, is it not? Give your child a spiritual education and he or she will thank you for the rest of their life. Certainly, Srila Prabhupada promoted spiritual education. In fact, we could say that those two words summarize everything that Srila Prabhupada did. The whole purpose of his coming to this world, the whole purpose of his coming to the Western countries, what he endeavored for, literally day and night, was to give spiritual education to those who don't know what should be done and what should not be done. Pravritim cha nivritim cha janana vidarasaraha. Those who are demoniac do not know what should be done and what should not be done. But the reason I thought to speak about this was not because that quote sounds very nice, but because I'm almost certain it's not a quote from Srila Prabhupada. As I have researched Srila Prabhupada's statements on many different topics, as we are told, Guru Mukha Padmava Ketchitete Kariya Aikya, Arna Kari Hamalayasha. We should make one with our heart the words of the spiritual master and not desire anything else, not aspire for anything outside that. Particularly in one of the fields in particular which I've researched and asked other devotees to research is in the field of spiritual education, because in the last few years, several devotees working with me have set up Gurukul projects. By Gurukul, we mean what Srila Prabhupada called the Gurukul. There are many nowadays in India and in ISKCON also, what goes by the name of a Gurukul is something in which non-spiritual education is the main focus, and there might be something spiritual along with that. But actual Gurukul means tadvijñānātam sagurum eva vigacchet. For gaining spiritual education, one should approach a guru. And brahmachari gurukule vasam dantro gurur hitam dasavan acharan nicha guru sudhira sohridam. This Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost spiritual education, and therein the gurukul, the brahmachari living, that the brahmachari should live in the gurukul is described. And of course, Srila Prabhupada was, as he was traveling around the world, he was simultaneously dictating his translations and purports. So before the seventh canto was released, nowadays you think Srimad Bhagavatam, you just get a whole set, but in those days We had, when I joined, I believe it was up to the fourth canto had been released, and then gradually fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, and the beginning of the tenth came, and Chaitanya Charitamrita came. So this verse which I just quoted about the Brahmacharya living in the Gurukul, that's in the seventh canto, which hadn't been released. So in one morning walk that Srila Prabhupada went on, one of the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada, is Gurukul mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam? No, because Srimad Bhagavatam up to that, up to the seventh canto hadn't been released. And Srila Prabhupada, he said yes, and he quoted this verse. So the Brahmacharya, this verse says, should live in the Gurukul, specifically live in the Gurukul, vasam, controlling his senses, living for the benefit of the Guru, is a completely different concept to the modern school education, which one thinks my benefit. He should be like a slave of the Guru, like a slave. Acharan dasavan, is like a slave, taking a very low and humble position, with a strong sense of heart-to-heart friendship with the Guru. Friendship, well, it's translated in English as friendship, but it's not exactly that one should walk up to the Guru and slap him on the back and say, how are you feeling? But a very close relationship. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada was certainly promoting spiritual education, and an essential part of spiritual education is to understand what spiritual education is. What is the basis of that? Spiritual education means, you're stopping it falling down, is it? Okay. Yeah. So the basis of spiritual education, what is the source of knowledge? Education means to impart knowledge. So knowledge means we have to take from those who know. How can we know who knows? Anyone can say anything. Who do we have faith in? You'd like to come inside? Those who are standing outside? For those who are to take education, they ipso facto, by the very fact that they need to take education, means that they don't know. So they have to have faith in those they are going to learn from. In mundane education, people have faith in the it's based on the process of what is called in the Vedic educational process, that is called Arohana Panta, which means climbing up process. We don't know, but we observe the world, and we make by observing and then by speculating, we come to various conclusions. And the Vedic process is Arohana Panta is the climbing up process, and Avarohana Panta is that we take knowledge which descends. So in the spiritual Vedic process of education, we accept as axiomatic Ved means Vidya, knowledge. Vedic knowledge is perfect. Srila Prabhupada gave the example that we have to accept the Vedic knowledge as it is. And he gave an example. Actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave this example that's recorded in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it's a standard example. It's not first spoken by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That according to Vedic knowledge, the bones of any human or animal is impure. If you touch that, you become impure. So then you can't do any pure activity like offering arati or doing puja. But the conch shell is also the bones of an animal, and that is required in puja. If you touch the bones, then you can't do puja, but if you touch this bone, actually you become purified. The sound of the conch shell is purifying, and the conch shell is to be worshipped also. So it seems to be a contradiction, but the process for accepting Vedic knowledge is that we take it as axiomatic, that there's an exception. This is an exception, and that is to be accepted. So this is the way to accept Vedic knowledge. Of course, any statement that is given can be re-presented, misrepresented, can be changed somewhat. Or the person who's imparting the knowledge, if they don't understand it themselves, they're not very good, they won't be a very good teacher. Just like, for instance, someone with a good memory could memorize what's written in a manual for training doctors. But such a person, even though he could memorize the words, he would not be competent to teach you. Because he doesn't understand the subject. He could say all the things. These are the names of all the bones. Well, that's the first thing in any course the doctors take. The first thing is anatomy, and the first thing you have to learn all the names of every bone, the Latin name of every single 600 or whatever bones in your body. How many exactly? Can't say exactly, because children start off with a certain number and it gets less as you get older, as the bones meld together. So, alright, just by learning you can, then you can repeat. Okay, this bone is this, this bone, and then there'll be the English word names for the bones also, which you have to learn. But then it becomes more complicated, and you really need an expert to teach you. So with Vedic knowledge also, one can learn the words, but one has to learn from an expert. Otherwise we may misunderstand. And we ourselves have to be qualified to take that knowledge. So there are many factors involved. Just like, for instance, you may want to send your child, if you don't want to give them a spiritual education, you may want to send them to a first-class, so-called first-class university, if you want them to become expert in non-spiritual education. But they have to get some qualification to go there. You may say, I want my child to go to Oxford University, so okay, you book your ticket from Abu Dhabi to London and then hire a taxi and take your three-year-old child, and you enter the precincts of Oxford University and you say, well, my child went to Oxford University. Well, they went there, they went in the grounds, but they didn't really learn anything. They were not admitted, nor could they be admitted at the age of three. There are some very bright people have been admitted even as young as 10 or 11. Some super brainy types, but not at the age of 3. So prior to going there has to be some pre-qualification. Now, in spirit, for getting spiritual knowledge, for learning all the technicalities of the Vedas, there is also some qualification required. Generally, one has to learn Sanskrit, and to be admitted into Sanskrit study, one should be born in a family of Dvijas, that means Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, or Brahmanas, and particularly boys born in a Brahmana family, they are admitted into Sanskrit education. After studying Sanskrit, then you can be... actually, in the beginning, they just learn at least one Veda by rote, just learn it. And then afterward, they can be taught philosophy. That's why even at the present time, you'll find, for instance, I visited a Gurukulam run by a Sri Vaishnava in Srirangam, Tamil Nadu. And the boys were there. One of the boys had the Tripundram. The Sri Vaishnavas, they have the Vaishnava Urdhva Pundram, the Vaishnava Tilak. And one of the boys was there, he had the Shaiva Tilak. That's called the Tripundram, three lines. Because at that age, they're young boys, it doesn't matter so much who they learn from philosophically, because they don't learn any philosophy in the beginning. They just learn to recite a Veda. One Veda. Generally, if at all nowadays, they learn one Veda. Although previously, Dvivedi means they should learn two, or they have learned two Veda. Trivedi. Nowadays, Trivedi means it's just a name. It meant that they were supposed to learn three Vedas and Chaturvedi, Chobe, that's supposed to be four Vedas. And Pandey means they get one only. They learn one. Anyway, the point is that there's some qualification to study that, but the most important thing Srila Prabhupada said in Gurukul is to build character. And that will be imparted definitely not in the modern education system, does not aim at imparting character. It aims at getting you a degree with as high marks as possible. There are advertisements in India for the schools, private schools, and for tuitions, and they show so-and-so went to our school, got 97%, number one in all of India, and so on and so. So they don't say that such and such, our children, they learn Shamo Dhamattapa Shochang Kshantir Arjavam Evacha Gyanam Vigyanam Astikyam Brahma Karma Svabhava Jam. The qualities of a Brahmana, as described by the Christian Bhagavad Gita, are peacefulness, self-control, austerity, cleanliness, tolerance, straightforwardness, knowledge, and practical application of knowledge. So they don't say that this person has become first class in character. That's not part of the curriculum at all. It's not even considered. But the Gurukul education is, spiritual education is something completely different. And one doesn't have even to be a very brainy to imbibe that. The main point is not to be brainy. Of course, that's also required, because there are required spiritual teachers who can actually teach something. It's not that spiritual life is without knowledge. Knowledge also has to be imparted, just like I'm here in the undertaking of imparting knowledge to you, much of which you may have already heard before. But that's also part of the system of imparting knowledge, to repeat. If you hear Srila Prabhupada's lectures, you'll same points he's making again and again and again. So some learning is required for that. But the main thing that should be imparted, and imparted by the teacher and imbibed on the part of the student, is pure devotional service to Krishna. And then how can we recognize what is pure devotional service? And we have to learn what are the symptoms, otherwise someone may cheat. It's very easy to advertise someone is a great devotee, they came directly from the spiritual world. Then people may believe it just blindly, but one should understand from the symptoms which are described in Shastra. We find in Srimad Bhagavatam there are several lists of good qualities, in Srimad Bhagavad Gita also, the qualities of spiritually advanced persons. In Gita, in the beginning of chapter 16, Sattvasang should hear. The first quality, fearlessness. Second quality is Sattvasang Shuddhi, which means to be fixed in one's constitutional position. So the quality should be there. There are several lists in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the symptoms of a devotee who has attained to the level of Bhava Bhakti. So the symptoms. In brief, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said that a Vaishnava is one who chants the holy name of Krishna once. Then again, he said a devotee is one who's always chanting, and one who by seeing others start to chant. So there are different ways in which a Vaishnava may be recognized, but this should be imparted. So the basis of knowledge in spiritual education is Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Which is most important out of these? What do you think? Guru. Okay. So there's so many gurus who are speaking. Are they all gurus? How can you recognize who's a guru? Shastra. So Shastra is most important because the guru has to speak from Shastra. But on the other hand, you can't understand Shastra without guru. So they're both most important. From one perspective, Shastra is most important, because if the guru must speak according to Shastra. But then the Shastra can be difficult to understand and can be misrepresented also. So it's also essential, or it's required completely, that one has to have a guru who will explain all these points. And that is the basic purpose of accepting a guru, to tell you, give you spiritual education. And everyone please turn off their cell phone. Tad vijnanartham saguru mevabhiga chet. One should approach a guru for the purpose of acquiring spiritual knowledge. So that's the basic understanding. The gurus, they're supposed to speak spiritual knowledge and to live it also. So guru mokha padma vakya, the words of the guru, chitete koriya aikya, making them one with our heart, we should not desire anything else. So the words of the guru, they are the distilled, he speaks Shastra, and the distilled essence of the Shastra. As we find in the beginning of Bhagavatam, the sages at Naimisharanya, they asked Suta Goswami that people in Kali Yuga have short lives, and they prayana payusho sabhya kalavas ninyuge janaha manda sumanda mati amanda bhaga yubudruta. People in Kali Yuga are completely disqualified from spiritual life. Even if they were qualified, they don't live long enough to read all the scriptures. The spiritual knowledge comes from the Veda, but people don't even live long enough to read all the Vedas, to study all the Vedas. And their minds are all messed up. So even if they did read all, they still wouldn't understand it all. So therefore they are Suta Goswami, who had heard all the Vedas from proper authorities, gurus, sadhu, from proper sadhus. So you please tell us what is the essence. And that essence is Srimad Bhagavatam. So we hear the message of Shastra from the guru and gurus. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yatha Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamsa. We offer obeisance to the guru and to the gurus. The first words of Chaitanya Charitamrita are, first two words, anyone? Vande Gurun. We offer our obeisance to the gurus. Plural. So the gurus also present the knowledge of Shastra in a manner that is suitable for the understanding of those who will hear it. They don't change the message. If they change the message, then they're not a guru. But they present it in a manner that is suitable for these hearers. Just like, for instance, commonly in imparting spiritual knowledge, various analogies are given. There are many in Bhagavad Gita. Can anyone say, I'll give you one to get started? Yatha dipa nivatasto. The consciousness of a yogi is still like a lamp in a windless place. Can you think of any? There are many in Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, that just like water is... the Padma Patra, the lotus leaf is on the water, but it's not in the water. So in the same way, a person should live in this world, but not be closely attached to it. In many, many, come on. Who's reading Bhagavad Gita? Let's see.
What if tortoise?
The tortoise withdraws. When there's any danger, he withdraws his limbs. So in the same way, a transcendentalist withdraws when he finds the senses are going to be involved with the sense objects, he withdraws. Anyway, there are so many in Bhagavad Gita. So there are many analogies which may be given, as Srila Prabhupada gave. We'll find in the traditional teachings, many of the analogies are from the everyday world, just like a lamp in a flame in a windless place. But nowadays we have electric lights, so that might be difficult for people to understand what is that analogy, because you don't see lamps in windless or windy places. You just don't see that kind of burning candle. And tortoise, if you're in this concrete jungle, you won't find it. Maybe you'll find it in the Bangladeshi restaurant. At least in Bangladesh, I used to see they'd sell tortoises and be put out on the street upside down. So they're going like this, and someone picks it up. How much is that? And then they take it away and eat it. What was the other example?
Boat.
The Padma Patra, that also. You probably buy lotus leaves here for eating, but you don't see them in the lake. Yeah, the boat can be even one of the senses on which a boat is carried away by the wind. If we don't control our senses, it can be like a boat. You have a good strong boat, but if it's a very heavy wind, can be very dangerous, and you can be just carried away off course. So you also don't see that much. So Srila Prabhupada, he gave examples. He invented, you could say, many examples. Just like flying an airplane. Of course, in Vedic literature, we are told also about the Vimanas, which would fly without fly by mantra, Pushpa Vimana, Pushpak Vimana is very famous, of Kuvera, later taken by Ravana and later by Rama. So Srila Prabhupada gave several examples of this. He said, just like you can create a 747 Boeing jet. We just heard Srila Prabhupada was talking, we heard the recording of Srila Prabhupada speaking about this, but you can't make a mosquito. You can't make a Boeing jet that will reproduce itself. Another example he gave is that you can learn in the flying school how to fly a plane, but then if you go up in a one-seater plane, that means only then you're on your own. Whatever you've learned, you have to then you have to put that into practice. There's no one to help you then. So Srila Prabhupada gave that example. We learn, but ultimately we have to fly our own plane. We have to take charge of our own spiritual life, remembering all the instructions that we've heard. So Srila Prabhupada, he gave many examples. He said the dog is running on four legs and the man is running on four wheels with the motor car. So what is the difference? It's the same. They're both running after sense gratification. So Srila Prabhupada gave many analogies suitable to the time, place, and circumstance. Srila Prabhupada emphasized spiritual education, maybe more than previous acharyas had done, because he came to a culture in which spiritual education was absent. So he emphasized that very much. So the sayings of gurus, they're also very important, and they are to be accepted on the level of Shastra, if they're in line with Shastra. It's not that everything, if Srila Prabhupada says, please pass me, give me a glass of water. So we don't say it's not against the principle of Shastra, but it doesn't give us any teaching. So it's not that everything the Guru says, everything he says is divine because it's in relationship with Krishna, but we have to distinguish also. It requires some intelligence to be a disciple. And another story we heard from Srila Prabhupada is that, again, I don't think many of the stories Srila Prabhupada said, they're from traditional teaching. The frog in the well, for instance, is a standard example. So he told the story of there was the veterinarian and his apprentice. So the veterinarian was called, the one horse was choking to death with a big swelling in his throat. So the veterinarian he said, bring me a, hold the horse. It's not an easy job to hold a horse. Keep the horse still, and then he called for a lati, a wooden stick, and where the swelling was, he beat it, and it gradually all went down, and the horse was okay, apart from probably some bruising in the throat. So the apprentice said, okay, now I know what to do. So he went off to practice as a vet, and he came to a place where there was a horse with a swelling. So he said, okay, hold the horse, he got a stick, the swelling in the throat, he beat it, and the horse died. You beat the swelling there. Because that was, what's that called, the swelling in the throat? Goita?
Goita.
So the owner of the horse was very angry. He said, well, I just learned it from my guru. He said, who's your guru? Nonsense guru. So the guru was called, and then he explained the whole thing. You see, the horse, I could understand, because he's expert, that there was a watermelon that got stuck in the throat of the horse, so it just needed to be beaten down, and then it dissolved. In the case of a goiter, then you beat it and you beat the horse died. So it's not my fault. The disciple didn't go through the whole course of study. So we may quote, the guru did this or the guru said that. But we really have to understand it in context, and we have to actually say what he said. Now I'm coming back to this point. Give your child a spiritual education and they will thank you for the rest of their life. Srila Prabhupada, what he has said has been recorded, and there are it's recorded, transcribed, and there are also disciples of Srila Prabhupada who have recorded from their memory things that Srila Prabhupada said. And if Prabhupada was known to have said this, I would know it, actually, because I made a point to study all these things. It sounds like some saying taken from, if you get a book of quotes, give your child a good education and they will thank you for the rest of their life. It sounds like something which some non-devotee said, which has just been tweaked a little bit, and the name Srila Prabhupada put underneath it. That is not the way to get spiritual education, to make up something. It just goes completely against the principle. Even if you think that, that would be nice if Prabhupada said that. So, he could have said it, so all right, let's say that he said it. And then other people think, oh, Prabhupada said that, he said that. I'm not blaming anyone who yourself, you got that where from? ISKCON Desire Tree, probably? Looks like an ISKCON Desire Tree product with nice background and this and that. You don't know. And because you don't know, you think it's true. But it's not. And it's a very dangerous thing to do, to invent things that Srila Prabhupada said. Because then people invent what they think he should have said, or what they, in their misunderstanding, what they think is right. And they are it's actually what they want to say, but they put it in the name of Prabhupada. Now in this case, it's not a bad thing. Maybe they won't thank you. If you give your child a spiritual education, they may say, why didn't you send me to Oxford University? They may not thank you. But the point, why is spiritual education given? That is also described in Srimad Bhagavatam. As a spiritual teacher, I'm supposed to quote scripture, as we heard Srila Prabhupada did again and again and again. Guru na sasyat, swajana na sasyat, pita na sasyat, janani na sasyat. Daivang na tatsyan na patischa sasyan na mochiyad yah samupetam rityum. One should not become a guru, a husband, father, mother, a worshipable person, or identify as a relative with someone unless you can deliver them from birth and death. That is the responsibility, to give spiritual education by which one's dependents can become free from birth and death. So we should quote Srila Prabhupada, but we should be very careful not to put our own ideas and our own philosophy. Otherwise it becomes, just like Srila Prabhupada said, there are so many editions of Bhagavad Gita, but they're mostly, it's not what Krishna said. They'll put what Krishna said and then they'll put their own commentary, which is something different. Srila Prabhupada particularly took exception to the commentary of Dr. Radhakrishnan on the last verse of the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is, anyone know? Okay, very good. You got it right. Very similar to the more often quoted, but very similar verse in the 18th chapter. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, bow down to me. In this way, being connected with me, you will become as if one with me and devoted to me. So Dr. Radhakrishnan, being an envious rascal, is a term which Srila Prabhupada often used, and when I use terms like this, as Srila Prabhupada did, often those who are listening, they start to giggle, which means you haven't heard from Srila Prabhupada, because it's not a point to giggle about. It's a point to be understood. It's a very serious matter that... your parampara is broken. You never heard from Srila Prabhupada. If you think it's some kind of joke, Prabhupada was very serious about this. That people are misleading in the name of teaching Bhagavad Gita. And this example of Dr. Radha Krishna in his commentary on Bhagavad Gita said that it is not the person Krishna to whom we have to surrender to, but the unborn eternal within Krishna, which is a total misrepresentation of what Krishna says, because he's an envious rascal and he doesn't want to surrender to Krishna, which is the whole point of Krishna speaking the Bhagavad Gita. But he likes to, the Dr. Radha Krishna likes to take it as some kind of intellectual exercise on which he has to give his commentary, as if, as Srila Prabhupada explained, Krishna wasn't capable of expressing himself properly, so someone else has to come along and say that, well, Krishna said this, but he didn't really mean this, he meant that. If we do the same thing with Srila Prabhupada, we ascribe to him things that he didn't say, it's a very dangerous precedent, even if it's something that he might have said. Because Srila Prabhupada did promote spiritual education. No doubt about it. Another instance that seems to be... it's entered ISKCON folklore, or is in the process of being entered within ISKCON folklore, is... Another point, I'll just explain it. It's well known that Srila Prabhupada, or it's been many times told, that Srila Prabhupada, once in Mayapur, there'd been a feast and devotees had been fed, and then afterwards Srila Prabhupada saw children going through the plates which had been thrown out, the banana leaf plates, or salpata plates, or whatever. And they were looking for scraps of food. So that's well known. And then Srila Prabhupada at that point said that we should start distributing prasadam here in Mayapur. That later got extrapolated into ISKCON, food for life, which people generally it's presumed that Prabhupada started food for life, but not exactly. That started after Prabhupada left. Now, completely differently, prior to that, in the 1966 in New York, Srila Prabhupada would cook for the newly coming hippies who weren't really devotees, but they were becoming devotees by, some of them were becoming devotees by Srila Prabhupada's kindness. He would personally cook for them. So these two have been spliced together in there's one newsletter, an Amrita newsletter, in which it says that Prabhupada saw the children and they were fighting for, I don't know if the dogs were there, but that's some masala has come up in the story, that they were fighting off the dogs to get the food. And then Prabhupada, he said that we should start prasadam distribution here. And then it said that then Prabhupada went and personally cooked for these children, which was never heard ever before, but now it's become part of, it's regularly stated. So this is a misrepresentation. Never we heard this before. Only just over 1 year ago it came out in this newsletter, and again, now it came out again. And so devotees think, well, now, you know, so But it's misrepresentation, because Prabhupada did cook for actually cooked for the pleasure of Krishna, and he distributed that prasadam to hippies in New York in 1966. But there's never been any record that he personally cooked for the children in that incident. So you may say, this, and that. But the fact, we have to stick to facts. Otherwise, if we invent all kinds of folk stories, I've heard it about myself also. I've heard the devotees say that, well, he did this and he did that. I never did such things, but they like to invent some stories to make me sound more spiritual or some... Oh yes, I remember now. What was it? Yeah. There was something which devotees in Burma told to that's out there in the ether. What actually happened, I used to regularly visit Burma, going as a tourist. For the sake of the immigration officials, I went as a tourist, but I wasn't exactly a tourist. I was going for preaching Krishna consciousness. At that time, there was very little knowledge of a movement there. So one place I visited only once, and I just went around here and there, and then I stayed with one man, and he was interested. He was maybe about 50 years old, something like that. And I spoke with him all evening about Krishna conscious Indian man. And he was interested, so I gave him... I was reading the Bhagavatam. In those days, we didn't have it in our laptop. We didn't have laptops. I don't think there were laptops, even not in general use. I was carrying the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, one of the volumes. It came out in two volumes at that time. So I gave that to him. It was the only book I had at that time, because I couldn't carry much with me into the country. So I gave that book to him. Then some years later, after he retired, he thought, well, now I should take sannyas. He didn't have any knowledge of our movement or anything like this, and he became a devotee. So he started chanting and this and that. So later I heard the story, and it was it came back to me from one of my disciples in America, that someone had told this story in a class, that some letter had come from Burma to Los Angeles saying that we're interested. And then it was sent, because I was in that area, it was sent to me in Bangladesh, and somehow or other I got a visa. It wasn't very difficult to get a visa. And I just went there once, and I only got a visa for one day. I went there once, I smuggled in a whole set of Bhagavatams, and then this man got the books, he read them all, he became a devotee, and he spread the movement throughout Burma. Actually, it was someone else I was preaching to, who later took up Krishna consciousness very seriously and has been instrumental in spreading the movement throughout Burma. But it sounds a lot more exciting, the version of the story which didn't happen. But it didn't happen. But as far as many people are concerned who have heard the story, it did happen, but it didn't. So separating fact from fiction, and separating what Srila Prabhupada actually said from what he didn't say. In fact, there were so many times devotees would ask Prabhupada, I heard you said this, and Prabhupada said that if it's not in writing, don't believe it. He said there are so many Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada said that. So actually Srila Prabhupada's books are the main pramana, the main evidence for us. And other things he said, well, we may, they may be what Srila Prabhupada said, but we can't be as sure. On the other hand, we shouldn't reject everything that Prabhupada is said to have said, which is not in writing. Yes. One of my godbrothers, he told me that he was the town president in one city in America, and Srila Prabhupada, this devotee told me, my godbrother, Srila Prabhupada had said to take the deities, the big deities in the temple, out in procession in the streets. And then he was, many years later, he wanted to arrange that, and he got some devotees objected, because it is in the Veda base stating that Srila Prabhupada said the big deities should never be moved. They should remain in the temple, and that is the standard. There are Utsav deities, and usually smaller Ashtadhatu deities, which they come out and the main deities stay in the temple. So then a word came from the ISKCON deity ministry or whatever, you can't do this. It's against Prabhupada's instruction. It means, well, Prabhupada told me personally. But it's not in the Veda, it's not recorded. No one was recording that. So there may be instances of many important things that Srila Prabhupada said which were not recorded. But then it requires gurus to navigate our way through all of this and say what should be done and what shouldn't be done. Srila Prabhupada, in some situations he said one thing and another. Not that he's inconsistent, but he's speaking according to the instruction may be given to one person, it's not meant for every person. Just like Srila Prabhupada is very much against divorce, and in one case he sanctioned, and then Shruta Kirti Prabhu, who was Srila Prabhupada's assistant, his personal servant, asked Srila Prabhupada why he had sanctioned that when Srila Prabhupada has again and again and again and again said no divorce. Srila Prabhupada said, well, anyway he would have done it, so I sanctioned it because anyway he's going to make an offense, but if I tell him no, then it'll be more offense if he goes. So if we take that, well, Srila Prabhupada allowed it. So, okay. You see? Prabhupada again and again and again in writing, no divorce. And Prabhupada in one case allowed it. Okay, so that throws out everything else that Prabhupada ever said. So it requires devotees who are Guru Mukha Padmavakya Chitete Kariya Aika Anakari Homane Asha. Those who are fully dedicated to understanding and living by those instructions, to present them to their disciples. That's the system. Guru, we say Guru Parampara, but more completely we should say Guru Shishya Parampara. That's because the Guru has to be a Shishya, and the Shishya should become a Guru. But who can become a Guru is heard properly, which means the gurus, they have to teach and give instruction and see that it's being understood. In the way our society is going on with gurus having thousands of disciples, it can become problematic in terms of personal instruction. It's not that gurus can't have thousands of disciples, but you can't expect to have much personal, if any, what we call personal interaction, and be personally guided. At the same time, we do have facility to hear, and especially so many of Srila Prabhupada's lectures are recorded. And Srila Prabhupada actually emphasized reading his books even more than lectures. It is very important to hear the lectures, no doubt. But he did emphasize reading the books. So in our ISKCON, guru means who's a follower of Prabhupada. It's a straightforward principle, isn't it? Who is a good follower, they can be a good teacher. That's we shouldn't change anything. We may present it in different, somewhat different words. Just like Srila Prabhupada, his method of presentation, linguistically speaking, was very different from that of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. In fact, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's method of presentation was very different to anyone. In future also, we don't expect anyone to... Well, some of his disciples, to some extent, yeah, they to understand. It's very scholarly and very scholarly style and can be difficult to understand. It's not non-understandable, but it requires some intellectual effort to be able to enter into his style of presentation. I know myself for years I didn't want to do it, and then I just thought it was too difficult, and then one devotee encouraged me to do so, and I'm very happy that I did so. So Srila Prabhupada's manner of presentation was different. He spoke in very simple language and presented the Vedic knowledge extraordinarily. He did so in English language, which is not at all suited for the Vedic knowledge, and he was able to make the concepts clear to people with no background, no idea of this whatsoever, which is an amazing achievement, which is often overlooked. We just take it for granted that Prabhupada's books are so simple and straightforward. But it's if we read the original Sanskrit and the Sanskrit commentaries, it's amazing what Srila Prabhupada did. And because of the nature of English, its deficiencies in relationship to Sanskrit, then we may not get all the subtle points which come in the Sanskrit language. So some devotees should learn Sanskrit also, so that they can, if there's some misunderstanding, or there may be different interpretations of what Srila Prabhupada said, then we can check back with the original Sanskrit, what is stated there, because Srila Prabhupada was presenting the Shastras. It wasn't that he was changing anything. So, yeah, I thought I should make that point, that be careful. If you see something said by Srila Prabhupada, it would be good if it's given date, place, or which Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Text 5, purport, and then you can check back and see. Otherwise, it may just be someone's imagination, which is a very wrong thing to do. They may think it's a good thing to do, but even if the idea expressed is not incorrect, but it sets a very dangerous precedent. It's taken from some, you'll find this, give your child an education and he will thank you for the rest of his life. I believe that's from some standard quotes, which you may find in diaries. They have some quote every day, this kind of thing, or about education. You could probably look it up on the internet, and someone put the word spiritual before it and ascribed it to Prabhupada. But it's wrong to do that. Srila Prabhupada didn't say it. We shouldn't say that he did say it. You could say it yourself and put your own name with it, and those who want to listen and take you seriously, they can do so, but you shouldn't ascribe it to Srila Prabhupada. And spiritual education, yeah, we should know what that is. It's completely different from the slaughter. Now there's a quote, slaughterhouse. Srila Prabhupada said the modern institutions of education, they're like slaughterhouses because they kill our spiritual instincts. The whole idea is just to get money, to get a job, and go to hell. Yeah? They have no spiritual idea whatsoever. So this is spiritual education is absolutely required. But we should know what that is also. Spiritual education begins with, well, first of all, the qualification for enter into that is a sense of disgust with this material world. If one is thinking of being happy in this world, he can't imbibe spiritual education. Then the first point to understand is that we're not the body, we're eternal spirit soul, and everything begins from there. But even if we accept that we're not the body and that we're eternal, that is not really spiritual. Because we may still have the motive to enjoy this material world. And Krishna speaks about that in the Bhagavad Gita. People who know that we change body, but they think, okay, I'll do punya karma, pious activities, and then I'll get a body for enjoying in the heavenly planets. Sri Aishvarya Prajip Sabaha, mentioned in Bhagavatam. These foolish people think we will be happy by having women, wealth, and family members. So, to understand that we are not the body and we're traveling from body to body to body is a necessary prerequisite of spiritual knowledge. But it's not in and of itself that won't carry us into spiritual life. Then the next point we have to understand is that this process of birth and death is simply miserable. That's also not spiritual, to understand that it's miserable. Then we have to get out of this, then we're beginning to approach the spiritual. And then we ultimately, spiritual means to understand what is our position, that we are eternal spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna. We are meant to serve Krishna. Then that becomes the beginning. Sambandhagya. So this has to be properly understood. Who we are, what is our relationship with Krishna. Then we can go on to Abhideya, practically acting in Krishna consciousness. If we act in Krishna consciousness but we don't require this sambandha gyan of why we're doing what we're doing, then Abhideya will not develop into prayoja, which means the ultimate goal, which is to acquire or to be blessed with coming to the platform of Krishna prema. If we perform the activities of devotional service but we're thinking of enjoying this material world by doing so, then we won't get the result. So much spiritual education is required. We have to take the process very carefully. Otherwise, we may be misled. So the beginning in any philosophical discourse or philosophical education is what's called in English epistemology. Finding out what is our source of knowledge, and then comes hermeneutics, which means how to understand spiritual texts. So this in this Vedic educational system, these two categories are subsumed under the heading Pramana Tattva. What are the sources of our evidence? And generally that's stated, well, there are different, even at this level, how do we get knowledge? The different opinions are given. Jiva Goswami has, they're not very different opinions within the Vedic culture of how to acquire knowledge. But Jiva Goswami, there are 10 main sources of Praman, but Jiva Goswami included, he brought them all together and said that there is Shabda, that is Vedic knowledge, Pratyaksha, direct sensory perception, and Anuman, which is a wide category, intellectual efforts to understand according to Shastra. So Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, these three are needed. We can't invent Shastra. We shouldn't also invent what is said by Guru. We have to follow. Srila Prabhupada so many times spoke against mental speculation. Don't invent something. Hare Krishna.
There's no record of Prabhupada ever saying that. Doesn't even make sense. Give your child singular special education and leave Guru. Well, thank you for the rest of their life. It's very dangerous, this inventing things and describing it to Prabhupada or Shastra. And you can just make up anything. The Prabhupada said it. Whatever you want to say, you say you describe it to Prabhupada. But that's not following the parampara, is it? It makes it cheap also. And no one will believe anything that Prabhupada actually said.
Yeah. Well, maybe the books could be presented in little detail now. And I'll just go to the bathroom and come back. That's one way I have something in common with Srila Prabhupada. But this is it's nothing complementary in that sense. That, yeah, Srila Prabhupada often, he didn't give very long lectures. He was also, although he didn't do much about it, he was a diabetes patient. That's external. He's a pure devotee of Krishna. But he also had frequent visits to the bathroom. So I shouldn't say that.